thank you for being here. My name is Lauren De Laguna. I'm filling in for Hal Shirtlift today, and this is the Camp Constitution Report, and we are going to just be talking about a story that is dear to me because it is my personal story of what I experienced going through law school as a conservative, as somebody who had strong ideals, and what that process was like for me. So I decided to go to Suffolk University Law School in Boston, and I went there because it was my mom's alma mater where she went, and I knew that it was a very liberal school. But I was eager to go there because I thought it doesn't really matter what other students believe as long as I do my best to stay true to my values and I express those values. I didn't want to be silent. I didn't want to be bullied into silence, and I didn't think that was going to be an issue. I thought the whole part of law school is debating. People come to law school if they enjoy debating, so it shouldn't be an issue to differ with people on their opinions. In fact, it should be beneficial to me to be able to come from a different worldview. I was wrong. It was really difficult. So I started the semester, well, you start law school as a 1L is what they call it. You go 1L, 2L, 3L. And I started in constitutional law, which is normal. And my professor was just extremely left-wing. He made everything about left-wing politics. He decided to not cover certain topics in order to instead discuss the idea of what America would be like without a constitution and how racist the constitution is and how racist police officers are, yada, yada, yada. This man promoted something called abolitionist constitutionalism theory. His name was Professor Reyes. He still is a professor at Suffolk University. So I was taking his class, and I would raise my hand quite frequently just to disagree with him, to explain why I thought differently and why I believed the dissent was correct or why I thought the majority was correct when he would say the opposite. And he did not like my input. It didn't matter if my input was on topic, was relevant, was something additive to the class. He did not want to hear any input that didn't go along with exactly what he was saying. So, and keep in mind, this is all during COVID. So we were all online. We were doing law school online, on a computer, on Zoom. We didn't get to like see these professors in person. So I was raising my hand via Zoom. And the way that you do that is you click a button, a little hand type thing comes up. It's just like a drawing of a hand. And that's supposed to alert professors that you want to contribute to the class. And I put my little hand up and he ignored me, like he started to do. After a couple of months, he just started to ignore my hand. So he was doing that again. And he was talking about Trump being racist, something along those lines. It was, you know, President Trump is a racist because he has this Muslim ban that prevents people who are Muslim from coming into the country. And this is not true. If you look at the quote unquote Muslim ban, it was a list of countries that were having issues with security in terms of determining it was difficult to determine who really was who coming from that country, and therefore there was too many security issues. It had nothing to do with the religion or the race of the people that were coming in. And there are plenty of Muslim countries that weren't on that Muslim ban. So I tried to explain this to the professor, and he just ignored my hand. So I put a link in the chat. So keep in mind, this class is online, so there's this online chat on the side where even though the professor's talking, you could put a question in the chat or you could drop a link, and that's what I did. So I dropped a link into the chat. And one of the other students in the class told the other students in the class and me that I was a distraction. He put in the chat, "Lauren, you are a distraction to the class." Now, mind you, this student is a transgender student. So, and this will come up in a second. This is important. But this transgender student was trying to tell me to shut up in front of the entire class and was being really disrespectful about it. So I told the student, you know, "Hey, I have a right to speak. I have a First Amendment right, you know, constitutional law." Even though it's a private school, I was just kind of making a play on the con law thing. So a different student, let's call him Scott. Scott decided to privately message me and say, "You know, even if you don't agree with that transgender student, you don't actually have a First Amendment right because this is a private school." And I understood, but this led to a conversation with me and Scott, and we kept talking even beyond class, and we had this, all this conversation was private on Facebook Messenger. This student was asking me about my opinion on transgender medicine, on conservative issues, and took this conversation that started in the classroom and took it private and made it about politics. And I was extremely respectful to this student. We discussed how I thought that one transgender student was disrespectful to me, but then separately, in a separate conversation, we also discussed how I didn't believe that transgender people should have the ability to transition kids, you know, medically. And I don't think that is necessarily medically healthy, even for adults who are struggling with gender dysphoria, to medically transition. So Scott and I were discussing this privately. Well, this was all a ploy. Scott either worked alongside the professor of that class or was asked by the professor of the class to privately message me in order to get this conversation from me. And after I privately messaged Scott, after he reached out to me asking me specific questions, the professor wrote to the dean of the school that I was mocking the transgender student in the class, that I was encouraging harm on this student, and that I told the professor to go F himself over Zoom, but he couldn't hear me because my mic was off. But he was able to read my lips, even though my camera turned off. So he did a he did a hell of a job scaring me. I'll tell you that. This professor colluded with his student to gain a private conversation with me in order to make me out to be some sort of transphobic monster. So I had to go through the entire disciplinary process. I had to get a letter in the mail and via email being told that I was looking at being expelled. It was horrific. I had already spent, at this point, when I start going through the disciplinary process, the first year of school is done. Law school is 3 years. I did it in two, so because I did a condensed year over 2 summers. So I'm now halfway done with law school, and I'm being told that I'm probably going to get kicked out for having a private conversation with another student. And I was mind blown. I was scared. I was shocked. And I asked other attorneys what I should do to protect myself. And the answer I got from everybody is, "You need to change your personality. You need to change everything about you. You need to take down all your social media. You need to stop being so conservative." You know, I had previously spoken in front of Camp Constitution. My video is still on YouTube. You can look it up. I talk about my opinion on the election of 2020. I talk about it very openly. I talk about my opinion on my love for Trump and DeSantis and the like. And I'm very open about this. And so many people, conservatives included, conservative attorneys told me, you need to take down your Twitter. You need to completely scrub your social media. You need to learn to shut up. You need to learn to fight only the battles that matter. But isn't that the problem? We're told to only fight when it matters, and now we are engaged in self-censorship. From 2020 on, conservatives have been engaged in this game of self-censorship in order to avoid being canceled or banned, but you're already canceling and banning yourself if you're self-censoring. You can't say what you want on YouTube without fear of being demonetized or removed. You can't say what you want on Twitter. Well, you can now, but for a long time, you'd lose your platform if you said anything about the election or about COVID. It's horrific. It's horrific, the censorship that we're facing, and to now not only see it on social media, but now we're seeing it in the professional realm. So we're seeing it in law schools. We're seeing potential lawyers being told, you need to know what battles you're allowed to fight when you're an attorney. Because when you're an attorney, right, they could strip your license away from you if you don't play ball. That's what doctors are being told right now. That's what everyone is being told right now. There is a lawsuit in California in which doctors are suing for their First Amendment right to say what they want to say, but still maintain their license. There's a legal battle going on right now, and even though they expected it to be a mass tort, only two plaintiffs signed up. Only two doctors are brave enough to stand up and say, I want to be able to disagree with the CDC when necessary for the benefit of my patients. I need to be able to have the freedom to say that. And there's only two doctors in all of California right now who feel brave enough to join that fight. So you can imagine how I felt as a law student being told, you're going to be expelled if you keep up your personality. You need to change who you are. So I hire my first attorney, and my first attorney is like, your goal is to stay in law school. Your goal is to graduate. Your goal is not to win the fight, not to win the battle, and you're not going to win the transgender battle here in your law school. So I fired her. Right? I mean, she's great attorney, probably had the right, I don't know, attitude towards resolving it peacefully, but I didn't want to apologize. She wanted me to apologize, take whatever slap on the wrist they give me, say that, you know, oh, no, you're right. We should be like, giving kids chest binders and medical treatment and doing what she wanted me to just bend the knee, apologize, say I was wrong and uneducated, and that thank you for disciplining me so that I can learn. Yeah, that wasn't gonna fly. So then I hired my second attorney. Now, my second attorney is still a very dear friend of mine, and he is a fighter. He fights, fights, fights. He has been to the Supreme Court before. He is one of the best attorneys in the country. I'm so privileged that I know him. Yeah, and I fired him too. And the reason that I fired him is because he wanted to fight a little bit too hard. I was a little bit scared, to be honest. He said, you know, we're not going to give them an inch, and if they want to, you know, expel you or whatever, then we're going to take it to the next court. We're going to take it to the next court. We're going to fight this. And that's great and all, but I want to be able to fight for other people too, which means I need to get my law degree. So I needed a happy medium. I needed to figure out how can I not abandon my morals, my values, everything that I care about, while still getting what I want. And that's sometimes it's just such a hard balance to get to do both of those things, to stay true to yourself, but also still try to achieve your goals. So I found this really great attorney, my third one, third and final. He was great. Who just said, we're going to do whatever you want. I'm going to listen to you. You're going to, I recommend that you at least apologize and are at least humble, because I did not have that attitude when I first met this attorney. But he listened to me, and that was really important to me. And so I went in and I explained my story. And so the hearing was scary. It was another Zoom hearing. Everything was over Zoom. So I go into this like online hearing. There's a panel. There's five professors who are going to look at this affidavit, which is just like the complaint written about me by this law professor about me, A, mocking the transgender student that I didn't mock, and B, saying F you to him, which I didn't do. So he was given, so these professors were given evidence. And now with law school, the school is not required to give you any of the evidence before the trial. So they were tempted to not give me any of the video evidence, any of the text messages that they were referring to. So for instance, when I was told that what I was being disciplined for, they didn't give me like what messages they were referring to. They didn't tell me it was, hey, it was that conversation you had with Scott. I didn't know what they were referring to. So in order to try to figure out what they were referring to, I read, at first I thought they were referring to something publicly that I posted, because they just accused me of mocking a transgender person. So I read every single post on Facebook that I ever published, on Twitter that I ever published, on Instagram that I ever published, and like to see, did I ever make fun of any trans person? I couldn't find anything. And then I found the quotes somewhat in my private messages with Scott, but they were misquoted. So I wasn't sure if those were the quotes that they were referring to, but it was such a nightmare. Imagine preparing for court, being told that you're accused of a crime, but then being told you don't get to see the evidence until the jury gets to see the evidence. So that's what it's like being in a law school disciplinary procedure. So, but I was ferocious with the staff. I wouldn't let that happen to me. So I emailed them every single day saying, you need to provide me with evidence before this hearing. So fortunately, I was provided with the evidence, but only about 2 or 3 days before the hearing. So, and that was after I already found my messages with Scott. So I go into the hearing already scared, not knowing what they're going to say, not knowing if they have any more evidence against me that they're going to bring up, any more accusations that they're going to bring up against me. And when I log in, I see two professors with their profile have their pronouns in bio, like pronouns in their Zoom name. And I'm just going, I'm lost, right? I need at least three of these people to vote for me out of five. And two of them have pronouns and bios. I'm done. There's no way in heck I am going to get out of this alive. And that my attorney just looks at me like, girl, you're not good. This is not good news for you. But I stuck true with my word. I refused to apologize because I did nothing wrong. I refused to say, I'm sorry for saying F you because I didn't say F you, and then refused to say I'm sorry for making fun of a transgender person because I didn't do that. I'm allowed to have an opinion. And then I explained myself. I explained, look, I'm citing the DSM-5. This quote is not a direct quote. I was complaining about that transgender person because they're a jerk. Not because they're transgender, but because they happen to be a transgender jerk. And if you explain yourself calmly and rationally, even those who put pronouns in their bios will have a hard time disagreeing with you. So I explained myself, I was calm, I was kind, I was polite, and I try to use ration, and I try to explain to these people, imagine what it would be like going into a conservative place and trying to convince conservatives to agree with what you're saying. Imagine trying to trans some conservatives' kids, you know? They're not just gonna go along with that. And I try to give them the ability to empathize with me. And fortunately for me, I think it worked out. I was able to get all five of these professors at the end of the day decided that I was right. I had every right to say what was on my mind and to say it politely and to say it privately over message if maybe I'm saying something offensive. I could have a public right to it, but I could also get backlash for that. So you do need to be careful as to what you say, but simultaneously you still have to be true to who you are. And that's really my main message for the day, is be true to who you are. Don't self-censor. I know it's really difficult. So many people have jobs that they want to keep. So many people have worked years and years and years in school, in residency, in internships, and whatever it is that they're doing, and they're scared of losing their job. And I understand that. But if you're scared of losing your job, you should be more scared of losing your country. You're going to be, if you don't say what's on your mind, and everybody who thinks like you doesn't say what's on their mind, then eventually that thought will not exist in society anymore. The society that you want, the society that you care about, cannot possibly exist if people like you don't speak it into existence. So, gotta keep fighting. And there's a great example of this. We just recently overturned Roe v. Wade. So that was a fight. We fought 49 years. It was considered decided law. Roe decided it. It was finalized. But we just kept on fighting the good fight, not by being rude, but by going the legal process, by using rational thought, by looking at the law, by looking at the Constitution, for saying what's true. If everybody started censoring themselves after Roe v. Wade and started being pro-choice and all the pro-life people stopped speaking up, that would have never happened. I was looking for an email that I sent my professor after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I wonder if I could find it. But essentially, as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned, I did send him a very nice email saying how happy I was to have him as a professor and how I'm so glad that everything I said in class about constitutional law ended up being the law of the land, and that, you know, what I said about Roe v. Wade being bad law was true. And he's yet to respond. That was several months ago. So I'm waiting for that response. But interesting guy for certain. It's important to just stand up for what you believe in. If Professor Reyes, if you ever see this video, I just want to say to you, let your students speak. Why wouldn't you let your kids have a conversation in your class? Don't you want people to explore the law, to look at the nuances of law, to come to different understandings and understand each other because of those differences? Calling me a racist white supremacist isn't going to make you right. It isn't going to make me agree with you. It isn't going to encourage students to look into the law. You're scaring people into becoming proficient attorneys. You're scaring people into studying con law. You're going to encourage more students to become, you know, tax attorneys, and not that there's anything wrong with that, and intellectual property attorneys, something where actually, IP has a lot of First Amendment issues as well. But you're going to encourage people to stray away from the Constitution by saying that there's only one settled answer, and if you disagree with that settled answer, that attorneys are going to just call you racist. And that is exactly what is happening right now. If you disagree with the status quo of the majority of the attorneys on campus, and if you go to almost any law school, the majority of the professors are going to be liberal, then you're some racist. And people are not going to want to engage in this. You're going to make the country into a one-minded, hollow country that even you aren't going to want. So, yeah, that is my story. I'm very happy to have graduated law school. I'm very happy to be where I am. I am still fighting the good fight. I am trying to get barred in Florida, and I would love to see the bar associations in every state and, every national law association to start encouraging more freedom of speech. I'm concerned about how the state bars are treating freedom of speech, how attorneys are scared to come forward and represent cases in fear of having their license stripped from them. And I would love to see more attorneys become braver in who they represent and stepping forward and taking on the cases that they know can jeopardize maybe their reputation among certain groups or even their license. It was the ACLU attorneys, mostly Jewish, who represented people who were accused of being Nazis, because that's what a good attorney does. A good attorney gives every single person the rights granted to them by the Constitution, especially freedom of speech. And it's sad that attorneys don't see that anymore. So, anyway, I would like to thank Camp Constitution Report for letting me step in for Hal Shurtleff today. I hope that he does okay with all of the snow that he is in right now. And I would like to thank you all for listening. If you would like to follow my Interview True Crime channel, you could follow me on YouTube at Lauren De Laguna. That's LAUREN space DELAGUNA. And I'm also on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on all that fun stuff. So I appreciate your time and thank you so much. I don't know how to end this, but I will let the producer end this whenever she is able to.